With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
It's a football Friday, but it's a sad football Friday here in Houston because the Texans are done. It'll be the Chiefs and the Titans on Sunday in the AFC title game. We were just talking in the previous segment as we bring in Bernard Pollard on the hotline. BP, we were just talking in the previous segment that the AFC divisional round was basically like the Bernard Pollard Invitational. It was all four of the teams that you played for. How do you figure out who to root for on a weekend like last weekend?
So it's funny because, you know, talking to a lot of people, everybody expect me to root for a team. I'm not loyal to a team, and that's not to be disrespectful. That's not to be any kind of way. I'm loyal to the game of football. And so I picked the Titans to win, or not Titans, I'm sorry, the Texans to win, go to the Super Bowl. Obviously, that didn't happen. They lost. So, you know, when it comes down to picking a team, I'm going off of who does what well, who doesn't respond to certain things well, and that's how it goes.
Bernard, as you're watching that game, and it was hard as a defensive player to watch them let up seven straight scores. If there are one or two things that you could have changed defensively, not to help them even win, but just to not make it so drastic, what would it have been?
Well, I mean, where do you start? So it's one of those things for this defense. And it was a thing that I was concerned about. And I mean, like I said, I picked the Titans to go to the Super Bowl, so I had to take them over the Chiefs. But I knew it was going to be a tough task. They started out fast, something that they haven't done in a long time. But defensively, they had no answers. They're hurt. You know, this defense is hurt. They need to do a better job this offseason getting guys. But when you look at this football game, I mean, guys just play soft. When it comes down to the calls, maybe you put them, you can run some quarters, but you know you're gonna put some man to man down back in the secondary. You're gonna get some matchups that you don't want. I'd have tried to play some bracket on Kelce because it was just whatever he wanted to do, he did. So I probably would have did that a little bit better. I probably would call some different fire zones just to give the guys just some energy to try to stop and make some plays defensively.
Yeah, to put at least one little positive note on it, there's one guy that I actually think of you a lot when I watch him play, and it's Justin Reed. And I feel like Justin Reed brings a little bit of hope to this next generation of football players because he's had to grow up playing football with the new rules about hitting and contact. I feel like he might be the best in the league at actually laying a legal big hit. Is that like there? Can't more guys be like Justin Reed?
I mean, you know, more guys are adjusting to this new rule, this new NFL. But you know, Justin Reed has played some good ball. But at the same time, you gotta ask. Is he consistent? Is he durable to be able to do those things? And, I mean, he's a really good football player. I know the games that I've watched, you see him make some plays, and then you watch and you're like, what are you doing? It's almost like defensively for the Texans, they take turns messing up. And when they take turns messing up, it's just like those are big plays where someone makes a mistake. And so, you know, I think they got to get more consistent. But I, when you talk about Reed, I mean, he's a very good player. It's just I want to see him more consistent. He's a good hitter. Obviously, you know, he laid the lick on Hill. But at the same time, when you look at other plays that he gave up, you know, and the defense, it's just like, man, like, you know, you want to see them play better.
Bernard Pollard joining us on Sports Radio 610. Bernard, where do you come out on the dynamic between Deshaun Watson and Bill O'Brien? Is it on Deshaun Watson at this point now to take some sort of next step, or do you feel like Bill O'Brien is holding back Deshaun Watson?
Well, you know, Coach O'Brien is he's a good play caller. I think sometimes in certain situations, you're scratching your head. But I look at Deshaun Watson, and once again, you know, for him, he's a dynamic player. Everything needs to go through him. He's got to be that Superman for this football team. But, you know, he's got to – if he's going to do that, I think he's He needs to limit, you know, just some of the him holding the football. You know, he's got to make, you know, better decisions at times. And, you know, I think, you know, sometimes he takes hits that he shouldn't be taking and just get rid of the football. But once again, that goes down to, you know, how are they scheming things offensively. But, you know, when you look at this whole – this football team, they went to the divisional round. This was – the moves that they made, they were trying to win now. I don't think they really looked at the future. And I said that, and this is the way Coach Bryant wanted to do it. So, you know, Coach O'Brien has to take some flack for that. But I think he's willing to take it. I think, you know, what the things that they've done, you know, they got to continue. They got to get better. They just got to get better.
Well, if you look at the Kansas City Chiefs and the improvement they made defensively just with a couple of changes with the coordinator, with the personnel, is the Texans' defense further behind than the Chiefs' defense was last year? Or could you see them making a pretty drastic leap next year if they just do a few of the key right things?
Well, I can't, you know, once again, with the Chiefs' defense, they're calling better blitzes to allow their front seven to get there. They're moving some guys around to allow them to make plays from the secondary positions. But, you know, when you look at the Chiefs, they're not doing that. You know, Romeo Crennel is almost like a cover two guy. When, you know, that's what he's comfortable calling. When it comes down to fire zones and things of that nature, he's not comfortable there. You know, those aren't his go-tos. So I think with this Texas defense, if you put those guys in some fire zone situations, if you put those guys and maybe some blitz situation. I don't know if they really have the personnel to really blitz like that and then pick up, you know, other guys. So I would say, to answer your question, I would say they're behind. They're going to have to get better. I don't know if they get better moving forward with Coach Crennel. You know, maybe he's going to have to open up the playbook and be willing to make some changes in order to get this defense in the direction they need to go.
Bernard Pollard joining us on Sports Radio 610. Bernard, before we let you go, which team do you give a better chance of pulling off the upset this weekend, the Titans in Kansas City or the Packers in San Francisco?
I'm going to Packers in San Francisco. You know, Aaron Rodgers is playing some good ball. I think it's, you know, this guy has been doing some really – he's been doing some special things. He's been dogged all year long before the season started, and he just continues to show up and make big plays. When you look at the Titans in Kansas City, you know, Derrick Henry can run for 200 yards, but if he doesn't score 6 touchdowns, you know, I think this game is going to be on Tannehill. Tannehill's going to have to put up more than 88 yards passing. I understand he had the 2 touchdowns, but they're going to have to do some big things because I think this offense for the Kansas City Chiefs is just too explosive, and I think it's going to be too much. I don't see Andy Reid letting it slip through his hands again.
There it is, Bernard Pollard, former Texan safety. BP, we appreciate it, man. Thanks for the insight.
Thank you guys for having me.
All right, there it is, Bernard Pollard joining us on the show. You know, it's interesting, that last take on the game in Kansas City, you know, that, hey, you're going to have to score X amount of points. I saw a tweet on my tweet deck here. Nick Wright, our former colleague here, who used to sit in this chair on this morning show on FS1 this morning. I only saw the quote. I didn't watch the video. But he was basically saying, hey, for the Titans, they got it done against the Ravens last week, but 28 points ain't going to cut it against the Chiefs this weekend. And I see that and I go, well, the formula for the Titans winning isn't to get into a game where they're winning 45-42.
No.
Right? Like 28 points might win it if Derrick Henry possesses the football for 40 minutes.
Right, and the Chiefs haven't been an offensive juggernaut. Like that, the Chiefs that we saw on Saturday, I think a lot of people don't realize that the Chiefs hadn't been like that this year. They were not the 2018 Kansas City Chiefs.
Right.
They were a team that has had to be more balanced. I mean, if anything, it's just an indication of how bereft the Texans secondary is at this point. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just a coincidence or an accident that a rookie quarterback for the Broncos torched you.
Yeah.
You know, like this is not just, it's not that, hey, Drew Lock is the future or anything. The Texans have serious issues. Yeah. I think that that's going to be a much more balanced game. The Titans defense is very good. The Titans are a well-balanced football team. I keep hearing people talk about how, oh, it's old school football. I guess, I mean, if you want to call it that, but it's not like Derrick Henry was the sole reason that they won that game. It was Derrick Henry in balance with the quarterback, with Ryan Tannehill. They just have a really good combo of passing ability and running ability and doing whatever it takes on any given weekend.
I'm picking the Chiefs to win that game,
yeah.
But if the Titans do win the game, it's going to be a 28-23 or 24 kind of game. Because if they win, they're a team that needs a script to win a game. And if their script to win that game is for Derrick Henry to do what he's been doing the last 3 weeks, which is carry the ball 35 times for 210 yards and possess the football for 40 minutes and make sure Tannehill doesn't have to throw for more than 100 yards in the game. That's the formula.
At some point, the biggest thing I'd be nervous about, and I find myself, tell me everybody if you feel this way and feel guilty about it. I've always hated pride in your own division. I don't like cheering for all SEC schools or all Big 12 schools or anything, and yet I'm kind of feeling this with the
Titans.
Are you
feeling an AFC South vibe?
And I feel so dirty about it. I hate it. I'm a dirty little boy. I hate it.
Of all divisions to take pride
in.
I know,
and I despise the Titans. But there's something about it where I'm like, yeah, go get him, AFC South. I've spent my life in this division.
You know,
I was in this division even before when it was the AFC Central.
If they were to do an all AFC South all-time team, Seth Payne would be under consideration because of
your longevity
of the division on my list.
Actually, yeah, as far as longevity,
right.
From 1997 until now,
yeah.
And even back when it was called the AFC Central,
I was
in the AFC South.
You got that right. The Astros have their fan fest tomorrow. It'll be interesting. The big names there are Jose Altuve and Alex Bregman, who ironically were named in a completely fabricated Twitter account claiming to be Carlos Beltran's niece to have worn buzzers under their jerseys for the last few seasons.
And when that fake Twitter account tweeted a rumor that had been out there forever, a bunch of other people tried to confirm the fake Twitter account by saying, I too have heard these internet rumors.
Right.
I think sometimes people are lying when they say, I heard this rumor. What they mean is, I saw this on a message board.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have it. Somehow an internet rumor or conspiracy theory has been writ large by a fake Twitter account that some media outlets just absolutely ran with. And it's disgusting. And it's besmirching the good name of one of the most lovable athletes Houston has ever known.
Jose Altuve. Yeah.
Who's already under scrutiny, obviously, along with all his other teammates.
Well, we're going to get to the questions they could be asked tomorrow at FanFest. But yesterday, there was, I guess, a caravan event, and Josh Reddick was there.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark Berman, the media caught up with him. This is off of Berman's Twitter account.
And let me say at the onset of this, good on Josh Reddick. Like, he's the first starter that we've seen at these things. The other day we had Miles Straw and a couple guys.
Who weren't on the team in 2017.
Right.
He's the first 2017 guy to comment on.
And the first big name starter that's been out here.
Yep. So here is Josh Reddick first being asked, and again, this is credit to Mark Berman of Fox 26, being asked on focusing. How is this team going to be able to focus properly on the upcoming season?
I just think we got to keep our focus on winning, and I think it's just as simple as that. We keep our focus on winning and then take care of business, then everything will work itself out.
One more follow-up, Josh Reddick being asked on having a new manager coming in.
Just things for everybody involved, but just something we kind of keep on a short leash right now.
How tough is that to deal with, knowing you have new management, you got to start over with somebody else, and that sort of thing, John?
Just got to take it step by step. It's one day at a time in this sport, and that's one thing that we do so well at. So once we figure that out, I think we'll jump right up on that train and just keep moving forward to win.
It's interesting because if this is a full-fledged manager search, Seth, where they're interviewing guys to be the not just the manager to kind of be a placeholder in 2020, not an interim manager like Joe Espada, if it's going to be a manager who's going to take over this team for what is going to be the remainder of this championship window that they're in, which is, another 2 or 3 years probably for this particular group, then I think it's really important that they pick a guy who is personality-wise similar to A.J. Hinch. And the reason I say that is because I see some names on the list like Buck Showalter, who is not a guy who has a reputation of being a player's manager. He's more of an old-school guy.
He knows how to say that he likes analytics, but if he were to be the manager, it would not be the same seamless transition. It wouldn't be that same seamless relationship between the manager and the analytics folks.
Nor I think the manager and the players, just because of the personality. I think A.J. Hinch is underrated in his ability to kind of, and it's just what may have gotten him in the end, he underrated in his ability to maintain the chemistry in a locker room like a clubhouse. That of any sport, you're around those guys every day, all the time, and he did a really good job. Ultimately, that may have been his undoing because that may have been the reason why he didn't blow the whistle
on
them
doing
this.
He's a little too affable.
Yes. But I do think that personality-wise, it's important for them to bring in someone like A.J. Hinch, because this is not a team that's failing. It's a team that came within 8 outs of the World Series. And normally when you bring in a new manager, it's because there was failure. So a lot of times the tendency in all sports is to bring in somebody who personality-wise was the opposite of whoever was there before. I think this is a situation where it's going to be important to bring in somebody who has a similar personality to A.J. Hinch.
Yeah. So Buck Showalter. I mean, Jeff Banister I like a lot. I don't think they've interviewed Banister, have they?
No,
they,
Gibbons is the only one that's
Gibbons
been
is,
reported.
Yeah,
the
Gibbons
guy,
is the old
Toronto.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll have to ask my Canada people, now that I know Canada people.
Put it out to your Canada
folks.
Like him. Your Canadians.
So did he... he didn't really give us any clear answers as to how most players are going to respond to. I believe that almost everybody is going to respond with a similar statement when they're asked about this at FanFest on Saturday.
Yeah. So Altuve and Bregman are going to be there. So I have a few questions here that I'm going to ask you, Seth. And you tell me, and Jonesy's going to be rolling on this because we'll compare this to the actual answers on Monday.
And I'm going to say this. I might give my answer as I would give it, but it's the spirit of what they're saying.
Yeah.
That, so I'll answer as myself, and we'll see how close it comes.
Okay.
This is me answering how I think they should answer.
If Seth Payne were the shortstop for the Astros.
Yeah.
This is how he would answer in 2017. This is how he would answer these questions. Seth, and I'm Mark Berman with my iPhone out on you, like right up in your face, like he was with Reddick. So, Seth, did you engage in any of the sign stealing activity?
Wait, am I answering as Reddick or as Bregman?
You're answering as yourself,
you
just said.
Right,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
Right,
no,
I'm right.
Just joking around. Okay. I'm pretending that I'm Berman. Did you engage in any of the sign stealing activity?
This is harder than I thought it would be.
You just thought you were going to come in and wing it, didn't you?
I had it in my mind. When we do the role playing, it's a lot harder. Okay, wait a second. Say that again.
So you're you.
Yeah.
Okay. You were a member of the Astros in 2017. You were the right fielder.
Yeah.
So, Seth, did you engage in any of the sign-stealing activity?
Look, we said everything that we needed to say to the investigators, and we're keeping all of that quiet.
Okay. What about the buzzers underneath your jerseys?
Look, that's absurd and ridiculous, and anybody that will allege such a thing, frankly, I think has skeletons in their own closet, or maybe they know something that I don't know. Frankly, I would have loved to have been smart enough to concoct a scheme like that, but they plumb loco.
Okay,
they plumb loco.
Okay,
let's see if somebody says plumb loco in an interview, I win this competition on Saturday.
You should get a comp day.
Yeah,
you should get a comp day. Let me just pause right here before I get to the next question. I do think I know you're interjecting some humor into this, but if they get asked about the buzzers versus the sign stealing thing, do you think there will be a longer answer for the buzzer thing?
This is what I hope.
Yeah,
I hope for an adamant denial, as Jose Altuve did. Jose Altuve issued a statement through his agent that he's never worn a buzzer. If I hear more adamant denials about the buzzer, I'm going to feel good about that.
Yeah,
because I think when you participate in an investigation, it's real easy to say, hey, look. Part of the deal of the investigation was we're not supposed to talk. When you ask me again about the did I cheat or whatever.
So did you engage in any of the sign stealing activity?
Look, I participated in the investigation. We're supposed to keep everything we talked about in the investigation. And I also don't want to get involved in this game where the media starts deducing who did and did not by which players deny it. So out of respect to my teammates and other people in Major League Baseball, I'm going to keep that all quiet.
Good job mixing in the other people in Major League Baseball. Make it as inclusive as
possible.
I
should have said that. I said, I don't want to sell out at maybe 7 other teams that may have been doing this.
Like somebody named, I don't know, rhymes with Mike Schmeyers.
Yeah.
What about the buzzers underneath your jerseys?
Absolutely not. Frankly, it sounds like science fiction to me, and I wish I would have been creative enough to think of that myself.
It's going to be appointment viewing to see Altuve and Bregman get asked about buzzers underneath the jerseys.
Yeah.
If indeed they get asked. Do you think the media will have a...
Do you think somebody will ask them? Yeah. I think so.
Okay.
I would be disappointed if they didn't.
Yeah.
It's a question that has to be asked. I really hope I get an adamant denial on that.
That's the thing. I think if you're the Astros and you didn't do it, you want the question to be asked about that, right? Last one. Does this whole episode of the sign stealing and the punishments and the investigation, does this taint the 2017 championship?
I hope it doesn't. It doesn't for me personally, but I know that our fans can make whatever whatever decisions they want. But I, what I remember was a really special moment when this entire city was recovering from Hurricane Harvey, and we did something that nobody thought we could do. And nobody can take away those memories. There's not anything that'll change how I felt in that moment. Mm.
What do you think?
That's what I would do. I'd really try to appeal to the sentimental side.
What do you think of Carlos Correa's masseuse?
I think
answer the question.
No, yeah, what do I?
Joking. So Fan Fest Saturday, Altuve, Alvarez, Bregman, the big names there, and then there are a bunch of lower level guys, minor league guys, Kyle Tucker, Forrest Whitley level guys, Chris Davinsky. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
You know, one thing that I had to watch the Titans game at the airport last week because my flight was delayed, and which is actually I got to watch it all in one place, so it was nice. But
airport bars are underrated sports watching places.
I can't do it at the bar. I can't trust myself. So I, because especially watching a game, I'll get distracted. And
I
the bartenders, the bartender always loves me. So, like, you know, they just keep bringing drinks.
Are a great conversationalist.
Yeah.
And that is your curse when you go to an airport
bar.
Yeah.
So I watched, actually, I found a good, I parked myself in at a gate. But the one thing I really noticed was, as much as we get wrapped up in our own little world and talk about, wow, the world is watching, I'm watching this really in this Titans playoff game where they're pulling off this incredible upset, and I'm looking around the gate, and there's like five of us watching this packed gate, five of us, everybody else down on their phone. I'm like, all right, where are all my middle-aged brothers? And my middle-aged brothers were down on their smartphones.
So when they say like 15 million people were watching, I shouldn't get too swept up in that number like I did with the flu number?
Yeah, 15 million people is 5% of America.
Yeah, okay.
Which actually is about right. If I looked around the gate, plus, it was one of the flights was an international flight, so a lot of non-Americans there. That would make sense if they weren't watching football. But the world was not watching that Titans game.
This I know. The TV networks are paying for whatever audience this sport of ours generates here. Yeah.
So. Oh, no, don't get me wrong. 15 million is a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. Yeah. I would take 15 million listeners to this show in a second.
It's 5% of America.
So
sure, I mean, I could turn an election, but.
The Pete Rose interview yesterday on In the Loop was really, really good. In fact, when I teased it into this segment, we immediately got several texts from people saying, boy, I really enjoyed the interview, or boy, I wasn't expecting that Pete Rose interview to be as good as it was, and it was really good. So John and Landry did a nice job with Pete Rose yesterday. The few things that I wanted to touch on with this was the first, I am curious with sign stealing that how effective it is. And if you're going to ask anybody how effective it is, then asking the greatest hitter of all time how effective it is probably a pretty good place to go.
Oh, it's huge. I mean, some of these home run hitters, you know, I can think of Johnny Bench, my catcher for all those years. If you told him what was coming, he'd hit the damn thing out of Yellowstone Park. I mean, it's just these guys can set on a pitch. You know, that's what guess hitters do. When you're a guess hitter, you'll go up to the plate and you might guess for a fastball. You might guess for a curveball. If you guess wrong, you could be in some trouble. But if you guess right, you just have the best swing you can have. You're never, if you know what's coming, guys, you're never fooled. And we all know in baseball, you know, you know what Verlander's best pitch is. You know what he throws. Does he throw a fastball and a slider? Does he throw a fastball and a curveball and a changeup? And, you know, if you know what's coming, you can really light him up. You really have, you may not get a hit, but you'll have a good swing.
Well, and this is the interesting part, is that I think Pete Rose was on a few weeks ago and said the opposite.
I can't remember
if it was on the midday or the afternoon show.
He's an old man now.
Well, no, but I think it actually illustrates what we know about life, which is really until you run the experiment, you just don't know. Because I've heard a lot of people say, well, no, it actually wouldn't help. It might distract you. Baseball players will say this, but they've never actually run the experiment and practiced using it and done all that. Remember all the ridiculous discussions people had where they would claim that using steroids wouldn't help you hit more home runs? And there were logical arguments for why they would say that, but the flat-out fact of the matter is, verified by scads of data, that, yeah, it helps. You can wait a little bit longer because your bat speed increases. You can wait on the pitch. You've got more velocity. Like, all those things.
Yeah.
It makes sense. So, likewise, it almost doesn't even matter whether it helps or not. There are two issues here. I think some people want to believe that it wouldn't help you because then, even if the Astros were cheating, it's easier to feel like, well, they would have won anyway.
Yes.
You know? But for me, look, if they were doing it, they were doing it for a reason. And if they practiced with it. That's different than just throwing it out there and saying, like, hey, let's try this in the World Series and see if it works. Then it was, they did the crime, and they'll do the time, and I'm fine with that.
I think the length of time they did it, too, is pretty damning as well. Like, if it was something that wasn't working, don't you think, like, after a month or two, you'd be like, this isn't worth it, it's not working. They did it for an entire season. They did it at the most important time of the year.
And it stopped working when pitchers got paranoid and started taking measures against it.
Pete Rose, his advice to the Houston Astros would be?
My advice is just sweep underneath the rug and let it go. You know, because are they going to start looking at every team to do this? Why would only two teams do it? Why would only the Red Sox and the Astros do it?
Right.
The other teams have electronics too. What are they going to do? Is baseball going to put a guy every game in the dugout to police the area?
I mean, who knows?
You never know. Baseball would do anything to save its face, and that's the way you got to look at it.
I mean, they do have.
They put somebody in the video replay room.
Yeah, and then in the playoffs, they had people all over the place in the dugout. Because remember when the Yankees were alleging them that the Astros were whistling. That was there are observers in the dugouts that said no.
I wonder if baseball, Seth, needs to do something like that just for the fans' sake. Mm-hmm. I wonder how many diehard baseball fans. I'm not talking about casual baseball. I'm talking about people who comprise the core group that baseball is marketing and selling and who consume their product religiously right now. I wonder how many and the average fan who just tunes in at high points of the year too. Quite honestly, I wonder if baseball needs to do something like that just cosmetically to make fans feel like the cheating is not only being addressed, but there is something they can see that it's being addressed. Because this is a bad thing for baseball right now, man. Like, I am really anxious to see if there is a tangible effect on the sport from this whole sign-stealing thing.
I wonder about that. I don't know. Sometimes, like, any emotion is good emotion. And
there are people who've argued, like, hey, baseball's getting more coverage the last week in the offseason than it's gotten in 20 years.
Well, let's think about the steroid scandal was particularly damaging because no team was untouched at this point. And this is where I think as an Astros fan, you should be rightfully maybe a little bit paranoid about whether you think baseball is going to conduct a thorough investigation into those other teams, because it would be really easy for the Astros to be the sacrificial lamb, and they set the example with the Astros. But Major League Baseball and Rob Manfred wouldn't necessarily want this to seep into every other team to where all those fan bases might feel tainted or what have you.
Yeah.
I don't actually think baseball is going to go out that hard into the other seven teams.
They've gotten enough.
There's no way of getting away from Cora and Beltran because they were part of the original one, but I think that's as far as the tendrils extend.
Yeah. Jose Altuve has been a big topic the last 24 hours, and Pete Rose was asked by John and Landry what the effect on Jose Altuve's Hall of Fame candidacy might be from this.
I'm sure some guys will. But I wouldn't. I mean, you're asking, I can only speak for me.
Right.
I'm not going to hold anything about Altuve. Am I going to hold against him because he's too short? The guy's a great player. I mean, you know, there's going to be some people who will never let this go away. And those are the people who don't like the Astros.
All right, so there you go. I do, you know, anytime something like this comes up, Pete Rose still being banned from baseball, that's one of those barroom arguments that's become so tired because it's been argued in barrooms for 30 years now. Yeah. Pete Rose being banned from baseball, can't go in the Hall of Fame. Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame, in my opinion. You know, he's the all-time hit king. He should be in the Hall of Fame if for no other reason than his Aqua Velva commercials back in the late 70s.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember his Aqua Velva? Do you remember Aqua Velva?
Aqua Velva was the scent of a man, right? Like, that was almost the go-to.
Scent of a man, yeah.
I remember as a child, I remember smelling Aqua Velva a lot more.
There's something about an Aqua Velva, man. That was the catchphrase.
We had a coach here, a linebacker's coach, whose name escapes me right now, but we called him Aqua Velva Man because he's this Italian dude that just, like, always had Aqua Velva on, and you knew he was around, and kind of smelled like, it's like, you smell like my youth football coach. I like it.
I do think that Aqua Velva did get typecast at some point as more of a Northeastern, you know,
oh, like Italian
blue
guy
collar
thing?
Italian
yeah,
guy thing.
Okay,
yeah, I think
right.
So. I do think it's become part of that persona.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't even know if they still sell Aqua Velva. If you like, Old Spice has made a nice comeback these last few years.
They got super weird.
They did. They plunked that the top half of that black dude down on a centaur, and he's doing these commercials, and he's really funny.
It's the best a man can be.
Yeah, and I think they've got football players endorsing Old Spice, and And so they've made
Is that Old Spice?
Old Spice. Yeah.
That's the best a man can be, I mean? Is that the slogan?
No, that's Gillette.
That's
best
Gillette.
A man can
oh,
get.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, see, I don't know the slogan.
Yeah, I forget what Old Spice's slogan is. But here, so we have the Pete. We have one of the, there's a series of Pete Rose Aquavelva commercials on YouTube that you can go find. To me, the one that holds up the worst is the one where there's a female reporter standing alone next to a batting cage.
Yeah, this is a tough one.
In which Pete Rose is taking batting practice, and the two of them, within 30 seconds, may have struck up a relationship. Here is the audio of the Pete Rose Aquavelva commercial.
Hey, Pete Rose, what's a man really want from his aftershave?
No fancy perfumes or fancy bottles or fancy prices. Man wants to smell like a man. That's why I like Aquavelva.
It seems so refreshing and masculine.
That's right. A man wants to...
feel like a man.
Yeah, feel like a man.
You know, Pete, there is something about an Aquavelva man.
Okay, let me just, the visual.
Frankly, bad ethics by the journalist there. That was...
I thought she asked the hard-hitting questions.
The very last scene is her putting his hand on his shoulder as they walk off down the third baseline.
Right.
I'm guessing to his Nova.
Right. Pete Rose got me too'd. She put her hand on his shoulder.
It's really grounds
this
for
suspension.
This
doesn't hold up at all.
That was the basis for everybody's argument against women in the locker room. Have you seen the Sam Weiss? That's what they should have brought up. Remember the New York Times in Sam Weiss's obituary, the headline was guy who made a weird tried to ban women from the clubhouse in 1990
dies.
Yeah. But he cited, yeah, you guys have seen that Pete Rose commercial. These women are going to be all over us.
She
was trying to make out with us in the parking lot and everything.
She did an annoying Jonesy, play it one more time. She did a very annoying thing too towards the end here, and I'll point out what it is.
Hey, Pete Rose, what's a man really want from his aftershave?
No fancy perfumes or fancy bottles or fancy prices. Man wants to smell like a man. That's why I like Aquavelva.
It seems so refreshing and masculine.
That's right. A man wants to...
feel like a man.
Yeah, feel like a man.
You know, Pete, there is something about an Aquavelva man.
She is a sentence finisher.
You know what, Pete? You know what else would make a man feel like a man? More conquests.
That'll make you feel like a man. As her hand slowly brushes across his scapula.
You know what, though? But she was... oh, she's too old for Pete Rose, though.
Back
I remember
then?
Back, yeah, there was a...
Now easy,
we have to
Seth.
Stop. Yeah, I don't even... now that I remember
easy,
the
Seth.
Details of
yeah.
it. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
We're out of joke territory.
Easy. Let me go back into it. Yeah. She's a sentence finisher.
She's a sentence finisher.
A man
awful.
Wants to smell like a man. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Can you just shut up for a second? That's what I was going to say.
What year was that commercial?
Probably like 19... Was he on the Reds in that commercial? I think he was. Probably late 70s.
You could tell she was a serious journalist because she had a hat. She had a sticker that said press on it.
She didn't.
No, she did, didn't she?
Did she?
Yeah.
And did she wear... I don't think she did. But here's... how great would it be if this were the first question at a press conference for a baseball player? Can you imagine?
Hey, Pete Rose, what's a man really want from his aftershave?
Can you imagine after game six, like the media's there, and the first, Altuve just hit the home run, and the first question is, hey, Jose Altuve, what does a man really want in his aftershave?
Hey, oh, well, Jose Altuve, what kind of adhesive do you use to attach that buzzer, allegedly?
I feel like Jose Altuve would answer the question. It's funny you should ask. He's good. My aftershave is good. It's ready.
For those of you just tuning in, Altuve emphatically did not wear a buzzer in game six. I've established through my fact-finding in my various role-playing experiments with Sean.
It was odd that you put the French maid outfit on.
Yeah,
with that, but that was weird. By the way, you're getting a lot of texts in the previous segment, we had me peppering you with questions as if you were an Astro at FanFest.
Yeah.
The audience doesn't seem to think you'd hold up well under interrogation.
No, I was the classic, if a 1970s police detective were to interview me, they definitely would have planted a weapon.
Oh,
because,
sure.
You know,
we got our guy.
They used to be like, well, he sure sounds guilty.
Yeah. I asked Seth the first question. He leans into the mic And then just starts giggling.
It's so much harder when you're in that first person scenario.
Yeah, I
had my answer all ready to go. This is why you have to do the role playing before you go into a situation like that.
That's right. Yeah. It's all about the role playing. All right. Someone's saying Axe is the modern day Aquavelva. Okay.
Okay. That's true. Yeah. Because it's a cheaper scent that you can put on you.
Someone said Pete Rose doing commercials for Grecian formula. Hey, look, it's still football season, but as we start to amble in, as we start to, you know, kind of work our way into the slower part of the year for sports, I'm here for a 1970s commercial segment, you know, where we go back in time to where commercials do not hold up at all in 2019. I'm all for that.
The one, the worst ad I've seen that doesn't hold up was the one of a dentist working on, there's this dentist, and he's working on this, like, 12-year-old girl, cute little girl.
Right.
And it says, there's a quote that says, "My smile's so good, my dentist says I could be his receptionist when I grow up," unquote. And you're like, I want to punch this guy so hard.
Yeah.
Like, wow, you're a pretty young gal. Maybe someday you could be my receptionist, and then I'll sexually harass you.
And I'll put you in the chair, put you under the gas.
Yeah, hang in there for 7 or 8 more years, sweetie, and then come on back. Yeah,
pats her on the ass and sends her out the room.
Like, there's so many things wrong with that ad. It's ridiculous.
All right, let's, Jonesy, let's do some headlines here.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Carlos Beltran, the next one swept up in sign-stealing gate 2019, or 2020, I guess now. Carlos Beltran out as manager of the Mets. He steps down yesterday. That leaves us with 3 vacancies in Major League Baseball, and we are under a month away from pitchers and catchers. The Astros, the Red Sox, and the Mets all looking for managers. Seth, how would you rank those 3 jobs? Mets are clearly the number 3. Which job's a better job, the Red Sox or the Astros?
Astros are a better job.
Okay.
Followed by the, and then the Red Sox and the Mets.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then eventually the Yankees when they get it found out.
When they get swept up in it.
Yeah. Because I've heard internet rumors. And according to everything that I saw happen yesterday was, if I've seen internet rumors, then it must be true.
Yeah.
As long as a fake account also confirms the internet rumors.
I know you've pointed out many times since this thing became a big story, since the punishments came out earlier this week, Beltran's role in this thing, but his role as a leader in that locker room or in that clubhouse. I do think that it matters a lot that he was a leader in that clubhouse. His role in refining the sign stealing certainly matters. After going back and reading some of the articles with respect to Carlos Beltran, I read 2 of his Players Tribune articles that he wrote, first-person accounts of both signing with the Astros and then winning a World Series with the Astros. As I read those 2 articles, Seth, I said, this is the main guy that was probably going through A.J. Hinch's mind when he decided not to shut this down.
Yeah, that was completely. And once we talked to Phil Garner about it, I think that became very clear that Phil Garner pointed out that there's a relationship between a manager and the clubhouse in baseball, and you got to respect the clubhouse environment and try to manage that. I mean, I think there's a reason they call it a manager in baseball sometimes more than a coach. And when the guy that you bring in to be your veteran leader is the ringleader of the whole deal, I guess maybe that's where it comes down to. A.J. Hinch's biggest sin in all of this might have been just, look, you got to sit down with, you got to hash this out. Maybe you're trying to maintain deniability somehow, but you got to sit down with Carlos Beltran and have a serious discussion with him.
Especially once the Red Sox got pinched for it. It's one thing to sit there and do it throughout the summer in 2017, but when baseball sends a memo out to all 30 teams in September of 2017, that's the warning right there. That at the latest, that's when it should have happened right there. Antonio Brown was fired yesterday by his agent, Drew Rosenhaus. Drew Rosenhaus, Antonio Brown's agent, who has gone down with the ship on this thing the last year or so.
Latest and the worst was there's an Instagram video of him screaming at his baby mama, who is taking his children away from his home, and about 6 cops or so outside. He's yelling at the cops. He's yelling at the woman. I felt bad for those kids. Like any kid that's been through a divorce and knows how bad it can get. Like, I felt really bad for those kids.
Yes.
And he's just losing it. Not to mention he was calling every single cop out there a cracker. And I think maybe only one or two.
Some of them he didn't.
Only one of them was white.
That's true.
I'm like trying to. He was calling everybody the N-word and crackers all at once.
Well, I think
if anything, it was really, you know what it was? It was kind of a blending moment.
It was a POV video, you know? Yeah. It was from his point of view.
Yeah.
So my guess is he was pointing out the ones he was hurling the epithets at.
No, but sometimes you'd have the. It was almost like he was going on opposite
day.
Because sometimes he was using the N-word on the white cop and then using cracker on people of color.
To get fired by Drew Rosenhaus is, that's something. Because Drew Rosenhaus will stick up for the worst of the worst when it comes to players.
Well, I think what it tells you more than anything, it's not a moral judgment. It's, wow, Drew probably realizes that there is no money left on this train.
That's true, too.
And, okay, I've squeezed this lemon for all it's worth. This is a disused lemon.
Fair enough. God, I need a more cynical view of the world.
Come on down, Sean. It's miserable, know, but you'll never leave.
I know, yeah. I know. Next time you go to that wine bar, let me know. All right, The Pro Football Writers Association, or Pro Football Writers of America, has named their Coach of the Year, their Executive of the Year, and their Assistant Coach of the Year. Two of the three are no longer in the postseason. John Harbaugh, Coach of the Year. Greg Roman, Assistant Coach of the Year. They're both done. John Lynch, the Executive of the Year for the 49ers, he is obviously still overseeing the personnel side of a team that's still alive. The Ravens and Lamar Jackson's going to win an MVP. I would imagine you wait all your career to win an award like this. If you're John Harbaugh, who's never won this award before, surprised me a little bit. You wait all your career to win it, and then kind of the starch is taken out of it when you get knocked out at home in the divisional round.
And then you have to go and receive the award the night before the
Super
happy. Bowl. This is I almost feel like now I actually like the way the NBA does it, which is to wait until damn near October to award it.
Right.
Because now, that's rubbing salt in the wounds, isn't it?
Yeah.
Boy, we were this close. We should have been here. But at least I get an individual award the night before I let my team down.
Do you think the window has closed? I don't think it was open very long on Greg Roman getting a head coaching
that's
job. Was he on the staff when you were with the Texans?
He was. You know what? Greg Roman. Now, and I will go on. I always liked Greg Roman a lot. I had quite a few conversations with him. I've talked to him, you know, when he was with the 49ers here. I talked to him after games a couple times.
Yep.
I think one of the things that coaching staffs do, though, at times that always make you scratch your head. Greg Roman became David Carr's quarterback's coach, having never coached quarterbacks before. And, you know, it'd been around a little bit, but that was where he cut his teeth. He cut his teeth on David Carr. And I don't think he was ready for it at that moment. And then he learned and became a really good coach. But it's amazing in the NFL how often they put people as position coaches in charge of at the highest level of the sport, they'll make people who have never coached that position as the position coaches.
Yeah.
So at least take solace in that. When you watch Greg Roman coach these various guys like a young Colin Kaepernick or Lamar Jackson, that we sacrificed David Carr's early years so Lamar Jackson could be MVP.
There you go. Yeah. It's a long play.
Thank goodness for
it's
that.
It's a long play that does not help the Texans at all.
It'd be like in the military if we're like, oh, you've flown a Cessna, have you? Well, here, take this fighter jet.
That's right.
Good
That's
luck.
Right. That's right. By the way, only one time in team history for the Texans has a coach or an executive won either any of these three awards. Wade Phillips, 2011, Assistant Coach of the Year, when he took the Texans defense from bottom of the league to damn near the top of the league. This will be a quick one here. Dave Aranda named head coach at Baylor. So he takes over for Matt Rhule. He takes over a program in much better condition than the one Matt Rhule took over 3 years ago.
A hell of a lot more pressure on him
yes.
than there was on Matt Rhule.
Now, no
I guess I hadn't really thought of that angle of it with Matt Rhule, too.
Aranda, the LSU defensive coordinator the last
right,
few years.
Right.
A very highly thought of defensive
LSU, coordinator. Yeah, LSU has some, they've got some filling in of the blanks to do, right?
Yes.
Not that I'm not trying to rain on LSU's parade whatsoever. I'm no Odell Beckham Jr., God help me. But they know this. They know that they've got – this is what happens with success. Okay, this will be Ed Orgeron's next test is, okay, how do you become the guy and how does your team act after great success like this? And
That's
there's
right.
the whole, okay, Ed Orgeron after 3 years, all that kind of nonsense. And people know this. People are aware of this.
Yep.
I think he'll be just fine. As far as Matt Rhule goes, this kind of highlights the fact that, Matt Rhule has done a really good job turning programs around, but when you come in as the guy that needs to turn a program around like that, and especially under Baylor circumstances, the pressure is not nearly so great.
There's no expectations.
So this is a different situation than he'll have been in terms of pressure and expectations.
Yeah, that's
of course.
That's a really good point.
Unless you get rid of Cam, and then you got a rookie quarterback.
Yeah,
hey, here we go.
Watch me go 1-11 again, 1-15, whatever it is. Speaking of LSU, there are certain ways you can measure, Seth, who the winning team is or who the winning state is when it comes to games like the national championship without even having to watch the game. If you have access to the traffic on a website like the Hub, the old P-Hub, you can tell which fan base is winning the game, and I bring this up because...
Oh, so there's more on this pornography website, there's more traffic on the winning side. It seems like it would be the opposite.
Yeah, well, on the Hub, the Hub Insights, they tweeted this out earlier this week. The game between LSU and Clemson began at 8 p.m. Eastern time.
Yeah.
At which point, the traffic on the Hub in Louisiana was down 19% below the average, while South Carolina down only 13%. South Carolina's traffic slowly recovered during the game, reaching back to average levels by 11 p.m., remaining far below the average. Louisiana remaining far below the average at 22% below. In other words, Louisiana people had better things to do than sit on the Hub and do whatever it is you do.
But the other people South started Carolina's checking like, out or trying to self-medicate.
Yes.
Like the Clemson folks just realized, okay, well, I'm just,
which,
all right.
Which tends to be the
trend.
There are
better things in life.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So South Carolina people were back to their laptops and their phones slowly throughout the second half. Meanwhile, Louisiana was celebrating in other ways. That's not to say the traffic didn't get back to where it needed to be by, say, 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
But those were the trends.
Part of that, too. And then there's just the natural level of depravity that exists outside the stadium there in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Is a pretty adequate replacement for what you might find on the internet.
Competition for the Hub.
Yeah, that's true.
Big
time.
Yeah,
the real life.
Yeah.
New Orleans is kind of the internet. It's kind of like the real life version of the internet.
It is. There's something for everybody.
Even more so than Vegas.
Yeah.
Because Vegas is still almost like, hey, people are amped up and like, hey, we're going to be Vegas-y. And New Orleans is more like the bright and the dark side of life, which is what the internet is.
Vegas tries to convey a much more classy vibe than New Orleans too.
Yeah.
New Orleans doesn't hide from who it is.
New Orleans is real. Right? New Orleans is real. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Vegas is Vegas is plasticky and trying to be plasticky as part of the scene. New Orleans is like, this is me. Deal with it.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Last headline. An English soccer fan loved the Norwich City football team so much that he left $130 in his will to buy the players a round of drinks after he died. Norwich City fan Barry Graves left £100, which equates to $130 American, in his will so that the struggling Premier League club's players could have a drink on him. Oh. He derived a lot of enjoyment from that team through the years, so he left enough for them to go grab a pint somewhere. That's really nice.
Did they do it?
They did. They took a picture and put it up on Twitter. The team took a picture, which I would imagine, I don't know that Barry Graves is in a place where, very ironically, last name there, Barry Graves. I don't know if he's in a place where he's watching them right now,
mm-hmm.
but his family is at least.
Yeah,
and
that's
I think
cool.
they can get a little comfort
put that
from
picture
that.
Up there and everything.
Yeah. Would you?
Who would I do that for?
Who would you leave? It can't be more than $130. What athlete or team would you leave $130 for because of the enjoyment that you got?
I would leave a heartfelt message about how much I love my high school, and I would leave it. I'd leave it to them, so my high school coach would have to be.
Who's still there?
No. But whoever, he'd have to be the jerk and be like, listen, kid, sorry, you're underage. You can't drink. And then I would write a scathing letter posthumously that would come out.
So you would set up an entire scenario.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Seth's an underrated drama starter is what I've learned.
No, I actually probably my college. I would send it. Now, it's more expensive, too, and more generous because you'd have to account for 80 guys or whatever.
I would leave $130 to Tim Brown.
Yeah.
Tim Brown, the football player. About 5 of my top 10 memories from Notre Dame involve Tim Brown running a football back.
Oh, yeah.
When he won the Heisman my freshman year.
Yeah.
I derived more joy from him, I think, as an individual athlete than any athlete ever.
I wonder, now, that'd be tough, too, if, I bet a lot of people would love to buy Earl a drink, but I don't think Earl does Earl drink anymore?
I don't know.
Earl Campbell?
He can use it for whatever he wants.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He could buy a cigar or something.
Shirley Temple.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. Text in 713-572-4610. Who would you leave $130 for so they could you could buy them a drink posthumously?
Jonesy says he'd buy a drink for Nick Foles.
That makes sense.
You know what he would do? He'd use it to like cleanse somebody's feet or something.
Yeah, you
know,
for sure.
He wouldn't even have fun with
it. He'd go buy holy water.
Yeah,
holy water and a bunch of the wafers.
He'd go use
it. Conduct communion.
He'd go use it as a visual aid in a sermon about the evils of alcohol.
100%.
Yep.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.